Welcome to the, July 9th regular closed session meeting of the East Bay Mud Board of Directors. Could you do roll call?
Directors Coleman.
Present.
Katz. Lenny.
Here.
McIntosh is excused. Mellon.
Present.
Patterson.
Present.
President Young.
Present. Okay. Is there anyone, I don't have any cards for public comment. Is there anybody here that wishes to make public comment? Looks like no. Okay. We will now convene to conference room 8 to discuss our closed session agenda items 1A and B, 2A and B, 3 John. And 4, and convene for our regular John. Meeting at 1:15. Thank you. Okay, welcome to the Tuesday, July 9th, 2019, regular business meeting of the East Bay Mud Board of Directors. The Planning and Legislative Human Resources Committees met earlier today and will report out under item 17 later on. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please?
Directors Coleman?
Present.
Katz?
Present.
Lenny? McIntosh? Excused. Mellon?
Present.
Patterson?
Present.
President Young?
I'm here. Okay. Time for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we're going to start off with a presentation for the Top Ops Award.
Yes, thank you. Real pleasure to have the opportunity to present this award. This is the American Water Works Association Top Ops Award. Each year, AWWA conducts a national competition to determine the best water treatment plant operators in a competition known as the Top Ops. In the industry, water treatment operators are known to take a great deal of pride in their work, the customers they serve, their knowledge, and their composure under pressure. The district's team competed under the moniker the Ozonators, a name that reflects their own strength, reliability, and potency. Although the Ozonators are willing to compete on any level, the competition takes place as a verbal quiz format, matching teams from one utility against another. Water operators answer questions on a wide range of topics, including water treatment methods, hydraulics, mathematics, equipment, monitoring, and source water watershed management. In March, the team won the regional Top Ops competition for California and Nevada, giving them an opportunity to compete nationally for the first time in 20 years. In June, at the national competition in Denver, they finished third among 18 other regional winners, the highest finish for a district team. These regional and national awards will now be presented by Director Young. And President Young has a lot of experience as it relates to water quality and water operations, and we'd like to ask her to present to Brian Miller, Water Treatment Supervisor, David Morris, Senior Water Treatment Operator, Kevin Regal, Senior Water Treatment Operator, and Brian Steltzman, Senior Water Treatment Operator.
These are your past awards for the
Just the traveling
trophies. We get to keep the little one. They
they don't really stack up. The third place award for June 2019. Congratulations to all of you.
So thank you, Ozonators, for representing the district so well and so professionally and producing such high-quality water every day.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you, guys.
Okay, I have one announcement from closed session, which is that the board voted unanimously to authorize the general counsel to initiate litigation in one matter. The action, defendants, and other particulars will be disclosed upon inquiry once the action is formally commenced. We have no other announcements from closed session. We do have public comment next, and we have two cards. And if there's anyone else who wishes to address the board on an item not on the agenda, please fill out a blue card that are in the back and bring it forward. First up, I'm assuming that the order of this will be first John Brasino, President Local 444.
Good afternoon, President Young, members of the board, Mr. General Manager. Since this will be the last board meeting I attend as the president of Local 444, I wanted everyone to know just how much I've enjoyed being part of these proceedings for the last 10 years. Because for me, coming to these meetings was by far the best part about being president of my local. I have learned so much from everyone that you could never fully understand how rewarding this experience has been for me. Because I'm not just talking about everything I've learned about our organization and the very important roles that each of you serve. For me, it was all the little things that I picked up along the way, things that you're not even aware of that had the biggest impact, which is why I am grateful for the many relationships that I was able to build over the years, and I am especially proud of everything that we accomplished together as a result. I wish all of you continued success here at the district. In fact, I'm going to demand it. I mean, just because I'm no longer president of my local doesn't mean I won't be keeping an eye on everyone, just in case.
John, it's been great to serve with you. Thank you. And next up, Eric Larson.
President Young, directors, general manager, thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak this afternoon. East Bay Mud, as you know, has been providing water service to San Francisco East Bay for over 90 years and wastewater treatment services protecting San Francisco Bay and the public for over 65 years. Doing so as a public agency is the best way to provide long-term protection and preservation of our most precious resource, while continuing to provide for reasonable rates for the public and maintaining a vibrant community and economy in the East Bay. This is something to celebrate. Also worth celebrating, on this day, 1969, some 50 years ago, East Bay Mud Board of Directors adopted a resolution to engage with Ask Me Local 444, and we've been married ever since. This marriage has not always been perfect and not without controversy. Sometimes we need marriage counselors or arbitrators to help us work through our differences, but more often than not, with clear lines of communication and without ulterior motives, we're able to work through our issues, because when it comes down to it, we, the union, labor, and management have the same interest at heart. The well-functioning of the district that provides the highest quality service and reliability to our customers. AFSCME Local 444 believes that providing fair wages, benefits, and working conditions is the best way to achieve that reliability of service, and that collective bargaining is the best way to provide fair wages, fair benefits, and fair working conditions for our members. We have 50 years of collective bargaining agreements, not all of them easy. In fact, they're never easy. But we've come a long way in fostering labor management harmony through those collective bargaining agreements. And as the president of AFSCME Local 444, I hope to continue that effort by maintaining clear and open lines of communication, honesty and transparency in my goals and objectives, and an unyielding commitment to the interests of our membership in the public interest. Thank you. And I have that resolution from 50 years ago.
Oh, great. Thank you, Eric. Congratulations. And we look forward to continuing our relationship with Local 444 under your leadership.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other folks for public comment? Seeing none, we now have 10 items for consideration under the consent calendar. And as per tradition, Director Mellon has asked to remove item 10 from the consent calendar. So do I have a motion to adopt items 1 through 9?
So be it.
Second.
Motion by Director Coleman, seconded by Director Patterson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Abstain? None. Passes unanimously. Director Mellon?
I'll give
to Alex
to Craig first.
Thank you. Okay. And I am happy and honored to recommend to the board the appointment of Ariel Bland to the position of Attorney 2. Ms. Bland graduated from UC Hastings School of Law in 2014 and has been a lawyer since that time. She did her undergraduate work at UC California, Davis. And in the last year, she's worked for the County Council's Office in San Diego and County Council's Office in Marin. While a law student, she engaged in numerous activities and externships, including working as a law clerk for a federal judge and lots of other activities. So I fully endorse and hopefully have persuaded the board to accept the appointment of Ms. Bland. Thank you.
Well, I'm not going to do the usual because I get nailed on it, but I will say this. It's always a pleasure when we get an opportunity to approve an appointment of someone with such fine talents. And hearing the recommendation of the general counsel is appreciative as well. But more importantly, as we're going through a transition when we're having one of our key persons retiring, yes, please, come up. We're looking forward to having at least the start of some replacement here, although I would caution you, those are awfully big shoes to fill because of the not only the tenure but the work that's been done. But your record's most impressive looking. We will hold you to being as good as your record shows. And with that, I would move the recommendation of the general counsel.
Seconded by Director Coleman. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Welcome unanimous. Aboard. Welcome aboard. Would you like to?
Well, I'd like to say something. I applaud that you didn't go to Stanford, that you went to the UC system. I know without a doubt that you'll shine here.
Even if it wasn't Berkeley.
Even if it wasn't Berkeley, it was still UC.
Would you like to share a few comments or thoughts?
Sure. Thank you for passing the resolution. I'm ready to get started and working. And just from my short time talking with Xanthi, I look forward to getting as much information as I can and giving you great legal advice.
Thank you so much. Welcome aboard.
Okay, we now have a public hearing. This public hearing is an opportunity to provide the public with an opportunity to comment on the 2019 Public Health Goals Report. First, we'll receive a presentation from Susan Teefee of our staff.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon. The Public Health Goals Report is a requirement in the state of California for all large water systems, those serving more than 10,000 customers, and it's been in place for a little over 20 years, since 1998. This report has to be prepared every 3 years, and by law, the utility has to hold a public meeting for the purposes of accepting and responding to comments on the report. Public health goals are developed by OEHA, which is the Office of Environmental Health and Hazard Assessment in California. It's kind of a unique to California type of a requirement. The PhDs are set at levels that are thought to pose no significant risk to public health. And at the federal level, there's an equivalent called a MCLG, which is a maximum contaminant level goal. And the way this requirement works, we have to report on any regulated contaminant that we've detected above its PHG or MCLG. So that's the purpose of this report. And I want to stress that this is above and beyond what's in our annual consumer confidence reports. So this is a once every 3 year requirement. This report covers calendar years 2016 to 2018. And during that time, as you know, we met all federal and state regulatory standards by a pretty wide margin. But there were two compounds, total coliform bacteria and bromate, that we did detect above their PHGs and MCLGs. And I guess not surprisingly, these are the same two compounds that we detected in the previous triennial report that we did. So I'll talk about each one of those a little bit more. Coliform bacteria is an indicator organism. They're generally not harmful in and of themselves, but they indicate that there may be a problem, particularly in a distribution system. So every sample that we take, we analyze for coliform, and it's either positive or negative. And anything that's positive, we investigate, we follow up on. The MCLG for coliform is zero. It's actually Z-E-R-O in the regulation. And of the 36 months during the monitoring period, there was 1 month where we detected it above its MCLG. And then the other compound is bromate. Bromate is a byproduct of the ozonation process. We use ozone at a couple of our treatment plants to control taste and odor-causing compounds. It's a really powerful disinfectant, and it improves the filtration process, but it does, unfortunately, sometimes make bromate. The regulatory standard is 10 micrograms per liter, and the PHG is 0.1, so 100 times lower than the regulatory standard. We can't actually detect it analytically at that number, but that's what the PHG is, and that's based on it being a probable human carcinogen. And so during our, we had 12 monitoring periods for during this time period, and in three of those monitoring periods, we detected it above the PHG. And our numbers ranged from 1.4 to 2.0. So significantly less than 10, but above that PHG of 0.1. And so staff recommendation is that we accept the public health goal report.
Can we take questions before we do public comment, or is there,
you can ask
order?
Questions, and then you can ask for public
okay.
comment. Yeah.
Are there any board members that have questions for Ms. Teefee? John?
I just have a quick one. Going back, have we seen a reduction of the I'm looking for the federal agency on what the goals are, the goal numbers are in the last couple of years?
No.
You mean
for
the increase?
Yes. Oh.
Have they changed, and have they changed to where it's negatively, potentially negative on the consumers? I know that there's certain measurements have been changed at EPA and other agencies. I didn't know if they'd been changed at the on the public safety for water.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of. They are often developing new regulatory standards for new compounds, but these two, bromate and coliform, have been in place for years, and
okay.
the numbers have not changed, at least in the last 30 years or so that I know of.
It's
Thank
more
you.
Like they're not regulating
yeah,
any things than...
Well, there's been some things that they've actually raised the bar in terms of what's acceptable that was not acceptable previously.
Yeah, not in drinking water.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Thank
Usually
you.
The California regulations are a bit more stringent than the federal
then
ones.
Anyways, okay.
And my question was just a clarification that our own goals for, I mean, obviously it's great to be at the public health goal, but our own goals are for maximum contaminants are to be at some, between PHG
lower,
and... The,
lower than the regulatory standards.
Lower than
Ideally,
half the regulatory standard. Ideally, zero.
Ideally at the PHG.
Right.
Well,
ideally
at the PHG, because there's no public health benefit to going lower than the PHG. That's kind of the point of the PHG.
Right.
But ideally, we want everything at the PHG. But then we have to take
But our KPI is set at no greater than 50%, right?
The KPI actually says that we have internal goals set that are more stringent than the but it's not. It doesn't get that specific.
Okay. I thought I remembered with THMs that we're trying for half the...
In general, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe that's just specific to trihalomethanes.
Right.
Okay.
Because there's a trade-off there. You know,
and the bromate formation happens more typically when we have higher salinity in our water than we're
Correct.
Anticipating, right?
Right. Typically, the McKellamy water doesn't have measurable bromide. You have to have bromide to make bromate.
So when we take from Freeport, that's when we're seeing...
Exactly. Exactly. In fact, the last PhD report from 3 years ago, when we brought more Freeport water in, we did have more bromate detections than we have in the past 3 years.
Right. Okay. Do we have a... other questions, Andy?
I wanted to ask about the coliform sample. So fortunately, it looks like this was only one isolated occurrence in 2016, and the remaining samples throughout the three-year period were not found to have any coliform. I'm wondering what kind of follow-up we did to identify any potential source. Did we learn anything from where we found the sample why it went away or why it was there in the first place?
Yeah. In general, every positive coliform sample we follow up on, we do some sort of investigation. The most straightforward thing we look at is taking another sample and confirming it. We measure the chlorine residual, and then we do a lot of field investigation to make sure there aren't any drops in pressure, compromises in reservoirs, open screens or places where things might have gotten in. We do a visual check. We look at our pressure records. We look at our chlorine residual records. I'm trying to think of other things that we do. It's a pretty thorough follow-up we do every time we see a positive coliform. We take, on average, around 400 samples every month from different locations throughout the distribution system, and it's a really sensitive analytical method. So it's not uncommon for us to find a stray one or two that pop up. They're microorganisms, and they're ubiquitous. So it's not unusual to occasionally find some. The regulatory standard is based on the percent of the samples that you take. So if you take 400 samples and one of them comes up positive, that's still
above zero.
Far less than, yeah. That's still zero from a regulatory standard. Rounds down to zero. Does that answer your question?
It does, except I'm interested in what, do you know where the sample was taken from?
The particular one there were two samples that month, and that was in a month where we, I don't know how much you want to get into the details of how we do the calculation, but we sample on a weekly basis. And so if it's a month, we turn in all of our samples for either 4 weeks or 5 weeks in the month, depending on how the calendar falls. So if it's a month where we poured on 4 weeks worth of samples and there are two of them that are positive, that rounds to 0.5, which is more than zero. So in that particular month, I don't know where specifically they were, somewhere throughout the... We don't have particular sites that repeatedly turn up positive. Those would be places that we would follow up on. But it's almost randomly distributed across the 4,000 miles of pipeline that we have.
Yeah, well, I definitely see that it's not a chronic occurrence, which is very good news. So thank you for the answer.
Okay,
thank you. Do we have any members of the public who would like to comment on the public health goals report? Okay, well then we will close the public hearing and move on to item 12, which is our consideration of a vote to accept the report.
I'll move.
Director Linney is moving acceptance of the report, seconded by Director Patterson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Director Mellon's out of the room. The unanimous vote of those present. On to item 13, our legislative update. And we have some happy news today.
Would you like me to start with that?
Sure.
All right, I'll start with an update and then go to the ledge report. Two budget item updates. The first one is on safe drinking. Is that better? Safe drinking water. And yesterday, the Senate did pass the budget bill that provides the out-year funding for safe drinking water access for disadvantaged communities. Recall the last time that we talked, there were two budget actions related to the safe drinking water issue. One was the amount contained in the main budget bill for the FY 19 year. And that was part of the main budget bill that was passed and signed by the governor. Now what we have is what is now SB 200, and I'll give you the details on that. At the last meeting, you took a position to support AB 100, which was the Senate and the administration's approach to the out-year funding, which would be FY 21 through FY 30, and it would provide 5% of the cap and trade revenue dedicated for safe drinking water. In years where it doesn't reach $130 million, there would be a general fund backstop for that. So that was in AB 100. And there were some conversations behind the scenes that resulted in a shift to put all that language over into SB 200, which is Senator Monning's bill. And one of the main reasons for that was so that Senator Monning's name would be on the bill, because he has been a champion for many years on this issue. So because the contents were the same, we were able to say, yeah, we are supportive of this. Please make this happen. The Assembly passed it Friday on a vote of, I think, 67-0. And Assembly on Friday, Senate passed it yesterday 38-1. So it now goes to the governor for signature, and funding shall start flowing. Any questions on that one?
Yay.
Highlight, we had this discussion today, some of the nuances that will take place regarding the consolidations and so on. If you can just...
Yeah, there are a couple things. One is, what is in SB 200? There's quite a bit of detail in there. And on the consolidation issue, it is one of the priorities that funding would be provided for consolidation. And they have it in different aspects of the bill. There's prior legislation on consolidations as well, and the idea is to protect the subsuming agency from taking on an economic burden that the ratepayers cannot take on. So the state would be funding those kinds of forced consolidations. And the state board does have the authority now to mandate consolidations. I think to date they've mandated 3. But they've looked at mandating others, and they're in the process of doing that. And they've also gotten some voluntary consolidations to occur.
Thank you very much.
That answers that? Okay. And the second budget item. Director Katz, you'd been asking about the money in the Infill Infrastructure Grant Program. And that money was provided in the main budget bill. There's a general budget item. It's part of that general budget item. And then the implementing language is in AB 101. And so the way they've separated the money out, there's $500 million. $410 million goes to large jurisdictions. And $90 million is earmarked for smaller jurisdictions. And the way they're defining that is counties with populations of less than 250,000 people. And that was one of the issues that came up in the budget discussions, and that's why they moved it to putting some implementing language in that trailer bill. The program itself would fund capital improvement projects, including water, sewer, and other utility service improvements. And under this program, which has been in place for some time, it's administered under the Housing and Community Development Department. The eligible applicants are cities, counties, or public housing authorities, or you can have a developer applying jointly with a city, county, or public housing authority, and they could then get the funding to pay for those types of improvements. So we expect to see the money flow soon. We'll be monitoring that to see when they've actually got some funding announcements out on the street. Do you have any questions on that?
No, I would refer or ask that you can refer some of that information to our new business office so that if questions come up, particularly with affordable housing developers, that this fund is, I think, intended to address that. Our new business office can refer that information to the applicants so that they can coordinate with the cities.
Absolutely. And we have been coordinating, so we'll get the final information to them.
And would SCC charges, I guess it could help offset them, but not pay for SCC charges because those aren't considered capital improvement expenses.
The language is very broad. It is capital improvement projects, including water, sewer, or other utility service improvements. So the detail could be in funding announcements, but in terms of the statute itself, it's very broadly written.
I think it would be of interest to see if there's a way that we could, as it does get implemented, to encourage that those kinds of charges for projects that are serving a, you know, public purpose or whatever get, you know, the SCC charge can be addressed within that, and that it can be a barrier.
I would concur. If there's any doubt in terms of what the legislation actually says, I would suggest either at your discretion, informal consultations with HCD, or if necessary, a letter from staff to HCD to express our interest in being able to enable affordable housing development to proceed with the intended use of the funds that the legislature passed. If there's doubt, it sounds like the language is good from your report, but I haven't read it.
Okay.
Ledge report?
Continue. Yep.
All right. We have a ledge report before you today that has four bills in it for consideration. The first two bills are companion measures. These have been out for a while, and they're now pretty closely aligned. One was just amended with some technical amends. The other one's going to follow, so they'll be identical. It's the California Circular Economy and Plastic Pollution Reduction Act. The overall objective of these measures is to achieve a 75% reduction of waste from single-use packaging and single-use plastic products by 2030. And there are several ways that they propose to accomplish this. One of the ways is to require single-use plastic products to be source-reduced to the maximum extent feasible, and also to make the plastic products be recyclable and or compostable. And when we looked at this, we did note that some of the compostable projects do contain PFAS, and so we would suggest that we just make the author aware of that so that when CalRecycle is getting ready to develop their regulations, they can take that into consideration for those composting regs. But we are recommending a support on these two measures.
And that would be an amendment? That would be
not an amendment. I think putting that in statute would, what statute is doing is directing CalRecycle to develop regs. So I think it makes more sense to recommend a support position and then draw their attention to that issue.
And the Ledge Committee this morning met, and we voted to support both those measures.
Okay. And I know that the PFAS issue, I'm sure, is being brought up by other advocates as well. Okay. So do we want to take them?
Well, actually, all four items before us, the Ledge Committee voted to support, so we could go through SB 60.
Unless they're without objection, we could just hear about the other bills and then take our vote.
Okay, SB 69, this is Senator Wiener's Ocean Resiliency Act of 2019. This one we're recommending a support if amended. This bill has come a long way since its introduction. He's narrowed it to something that is really more focused on what it sounds like he's trying to achieve. There are eight components of the measure. Several components we feel are more applicable to East Bay Mud, and it's the aspects related to the hatcheries and also the endangered rivers provisions. on the other provisions, just so you know, there's a voluntary vessel speed reduction aspect. There's some coastal wetlands study program requirements and some forest management practice rule changes that the bill proposes to make. On the endangered stream provisions, the main change is to take an existing program in statute that requires the Department of Fish and Wildlife to look at streams that may require minimum flow standards. What the bill would do is just name those streams endangered rivers or streams. And we don't see an issue with that. The McCallamy is not on their list as of 2008. McCallamy also has wild and scenic status. We don't see that as an issue at all. On the hatchery provisions, they are looking at increasing the survivability of hatchery-raised fish. And so they're looking at things like, how do you do the ocean planting? How do you do the barging, et cetera? They're holding us up as an example of how to do it correctly, which is wonderful. And so when we look at that, the amendment that we think is needed and serious enough to make this a support if amended recommendation is that when Fish and Wildlife is doing their study on survival, that they engage those local mitigators. In other words, they engage us and others that are paying for those hatcheries. We think we have something to offer to others, and we want to be sure that our success is built on and not detracted from. We have had a conversation with one of the sponsors, and they agree with that, and I think we have a very good chance of getting this amendment, but because of that, we're asking for a support if amended. Ready for the next one?
Mm-hmm.
All right, SB 134, Senator Hertzberg's water loss, water conservation enforcement bill. Senator Hertzberg introduced this earlier in the year, and at the time, introduced it as a technical clarifying change or a technical clarification to go with the conservation bills from last year that we supported. When it was first introduced, NRDC, which was a primary supporter along with East Bay Mud of the conservation bills, did not like it and was opposed. The bill has evolved. NRDC is now comfortable. They've removed their opposition. I had a conversation with them last week to be sure that they were very good with where this bill is today. And that's why we're bringing it forward now. And what the bill is intended to do is eliminate the potential for duplicative enforcement with regard to water loss standards. There are water loss standards appear in two sections of law right now. There's a section for water loss, and then it's in the water use objective for conservation. And in water use objective, it's part of a total that has four components to it. And what the bill intends to do is say, hey, State Board, if you are enforcing on water loss standards over here, you can't also enforce on the water loss objective if they're exceeding that because of a water loss standard, so that the water agencies aren't getting subjected to double jeopardy. But it still leaves the Water Board able to enforce in either place. And so we think the bill is in good shape now, and we're recommending to support.
Okay, any questions from the board? Okay, so I think we need a motion to approve or to support SB AB 108, SB 54, and SB 134, and to support, if amended, SB 69.
I'll move.
Second.
Moved by Director Coleman, seconded by Director Katz. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Okay. Anything else to share with us?
Green New Deal.
Green New Deal. Oh, yeah. Yes.
We have a resolution before you. Several of you asked for us to look at this and bring it for board consideration. The Green New Deal resolutions were introduced in the House and Senate earlier this year, I think in February in both places, parallel companion measures. The houses have not acted on the resolutions yet, but we thought let's bring it forward. And we went through it, and looked for a nexus with district operations. So we found a pretty good nexus with three of our policies, which we've cited in the language of the resolution, and we have tied it to building resiliency against climate change-related disasters, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and increase the use of clean, renewable, and zero-emission energy sources. And so we are recommending the adoption of the resolution.
And that, too, was supported in the Ledge Committee this morning.
Okay. I'm happy to see us taking this, considering this action, and I appreciate the diving in to see where, the Green New Deal resolutions that are introduced have a lot in them. So figuring out, and being precise about the nexus for East Bay Mud, I think, is helpful. And I think it's helpful for others to see that you can support this idea without taking a position on everything. I think that's what's holding some people back from, standing with it and taking the opportunity to take a stand. So I'm happy that we are considering this. Andy?
Mm-hmm. I'm also glad to see this resolution before us, and we'll be glad to support it. I appreciate the examination of things that the district is currently involved in to see the nexus with our current mission. I think that as the conversation continues, I don't think it's ripe right now in terms of the federal active conversation within the houses in their respective. The bills are not proceeding to hearing. But I think the concept of envisioning where do our communities need to go to address the climate crisis is a very broad one, and one where I think the district may find a role in other areas besides what we've called out here, particularly when it comes to enhancing public works and looking at how can we support workers who are displaced from fossil fuel industries. So I think that there's a lot of transferable skills, and we don't need to engage in it through a resolution, but I think there are research activities that we could be in conversation with partners in as those conversations happen separate from this resolution. So I'm glad to see this before us, and would move it if there's no other comments.
Second.
So you're moving it, maybe a second?
I'll second.
Seconded, I think Doug said first. Seconded. Oh, okay. Seconded by Directors Patterson and Lenny. How's that? I heard his voice first, but he's sitting next to me, so. all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Okay. All right. That was item 14.
Thank you.
Item 15. Related to the San Ramon Valley Recycled Water Program Pump Station R3000 project. This is also a resolution. And we have A, B, C, D, E, F, six actions to take. We have a presentation for...
We do. We have a presentation. Rena Thomas will provide the presentation. She's most knowledgeable about this project.
Thank you. Today I will be discussing the final mitigated negative declaration for the San Ramon Valley Recycled Water Pump Station R3000 project. I provided an update to the Board Planning Committee on May 14th earlier this year. The project is for a new recycled water pump station that is required for the expansion of the recycled water system to service more areas of the city of San Ramon, the town of Danville, and the Black Hawk communities. Would save approximately 980 acre feet per year of potable water supplies for the district. The project helps meet the long-range water supply needs that's consistent with the Water Supply Management Program 2040 and the Recycled Water Master Plan update. The pump station project would develop a 5,400 square foot area that would include a pump station building, parking for operations and maintenance, an electrical transformer and antenna. The site would have retaining walls and would be fully landscaped for screening. Construction is anticipated to be scheduled once permanent Durwa supplies are secured. The need for the project was identified as part of the 1996 San Ramon Valley Recycled Water Program Facility Plan. Staff coordinated with the City of San Ramon to initiate the process of property purchase from the city in 2016. The city reviewed those sites that were included in the 1996 Facility Plan EIR, and the city recommended that a further review of alternative site locations be prepared due to the close proximities of those sites to existing residences and parks and the potential for greater impacts to those uses. So in 2016, a site evaluation was completed that compared seven site locations based on a number of criteria that included the proximity to the site, to the existing recycled water pipeline, topographic elevation, other utilities, the distance from residences, and impacts to special designated areas. In that evaluation, the sites that were already included in the 96 Facility Plan EIR ranked low. There were two sites that best met the evaluation criteria and were considered feasible and were further analyzed in CEQA documentation. The first site, Site A2, located adjacent to Doherty Road, best met the site criteria and requires a property purchase from the City of San Ramon. The second site that was included met less criteria, but was included because it would not require a property purchase because the site is already located on property that's owned by Durwa. Additionally, based upon comments that we received during the public comment period for the ISMND, seven additional sites were also evaluated with the same criteria. Following that evaluation, staff's assessment was that Site A2 still best met the project criteria, has the least overall impacts, and is the preferred project site location for the project. Site A2 is located approximately 1,400 feet south of the intersection of Doherty Road and Red Willow Road on the west side of southbound Doherty Road. The nearest residence to the site is approximately 150 feet to the west uphill in the Miravia neighborhood. The next nearest residences are about 300 feet to the east on the other side of Doherty Road in the Altamira neighborhood. The construction would involve the installation of a retaining wall and landscaping, the construction of the pump station building, an electrical transformer and parking area, and minimal pipeline installation to reach the existing recycled water pipeline that's located in Doherty Road. The first photo here shows the existing view of the site that's looking southbound on Doherty Road. And to the right, we show the proposed project renderings with the pump building in architectural styles that's close to the styles of nearby public structures. The tile roof is going to be a darkish brown with retaining walls that are wood slat construction, all to better blend in with the natural landscape. The draft MND was published on October 8, 2018 and was circulated for agency and public review through December 7th. Pursuant to CEQA, the document assessed the potential environmental impacts related to the project. East Bay MUD standard practices and procedures and other mitigations were incorporated in the project to reduce the potentially significant impacts to be less than significant. And during the public comment period, we sent out mailers and notifications notifying the public of the project and of the draft MND. We held two public meetings in the City of San Ramon, and we received 57 comment letters and emails related to the project. The draft MND found that the project would cause less than significant impacts with mitigation measures applied for aesthetics, biological, and cultural resources. Some of the key public comments received centered around issues that were related to site selection, proximity of the site to residences, and impacts to the property values. There were concerns about visual impacts and aesthetics, construction and operational related traffic, noise, dust, and odor impacts, and in light of recent wildfires, the potential for fire hazards from the project. We respond to those issues in the final MND document, where we provided the additional background on the site selection process and the additional sites evaluated. To improve aesthetics, we removed security fencing from around the project unless it's required in the future. We included additional tree plantings and modified the architectural design to better blend in with the natural landscape. We committed to the enforcement of East Bay Mud standard specifications and practices during construction, as well as additional outreach and traffic coordination as it related to potential impacts to the nearby Coyote Creek Elementary School. And we clarified that the project would not have odors, as it is for highly treated recycled water that's been used in the area without any odor complaints, and that the recycled water would always be enclosed in pipelines without any exposure to air at the pump station. We cited the noise analysis that found that the potential noise from the project would not be greater than the existing ambient noise, and that the project would be in compliance with fire code regulations. All of the public comments that we received were addressed with no substantial changes to the MND. So we recommend that the board adopt the final MND for the pump station project, make findings in accordance with CEQA, adopt the mitigation monitoring and reporting program, adopt the practices and procedures monitoring and reporting program, select the site A2 for the project, and approve the pump station R3000 project.
Thank you. Any questions?
I would just like to comment. I applaud staff. The meetings, I attended both of the public meetings. Staff did a phenomenal job. They listened. They were polite. They took the comments seriously. And I think it's a reflection of what we have today. So thank you.
Okay. We can move these as a package, right?
I would recommend that you
separately.
Go 15A, B, C, and D as one package, and
okay.
Then E and F as a separate package.
Okay. Do I have a motion to adopt 15A through D?
So moved.
Seconded. Moved by Director Mellon, seconded by Director Patterson. Any additional discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, on items 15E and F?
I would likewise move those items.
Okay. He got it out all the way before you did, Doug. moved by Director Mellon, seconded by Director Patterson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's rather nice looking, actually. Are those crepe myrtle trees, or who knows?
Crepe myrtle.
Yes. Okay. Item 16, General Manager's Report.
Right. So we have a number of items for board consideration today. The first is that we'd like to provide a presentation on the results of the 2019 Customer Opinion Survey, and Kelly Zito will provide the presentation.
Thank you, the noisy mic movement. Good afternoon, President Young, directors. Today I'm here to provide you with an overview of the most recent customer opinion survey, which was conducted earlier this year. In terms of the agenda, I'll cover the survey background, key results, areas of strength, areas for improvement, and I'll highlight some of our outreach efforts in fiscal year 19 and fiscal year 20. I also wanted to introduce two representatives from EMC Research who conducted the survey, Andy Morehouse and Jessica Polsky. They're here to provide more technical, detailed information about the survey if you have questions. As you might remember, the district has been doing customer opinion surveys for a number of years. The purpose of these surveys is to gain insight into the public's perception of the district with the goal of guiding our outreach and increasing understanding and support for the district's initiatives. This year's survey was conducted in late February and early March and gathered information via phone interviews and email to web surveys of about 1,200 district customers. The results represent the geographic, demographic, socioeconomic makeup of the district service area and was conducted in English, Spanish, and Chinese. As for key takeaways, the survey found a majority of residential customers have positive opinions of the district, particularly our core responsibility, providing high-quality, safe, good-tasting water. Customers also share the district's priorities, particularly protecting the environment and preparing for emergencies such as earthquakes and droughts. Customers did express dissatisfaction with water rates. However, when respondents received more information about the district, many opinions switched from negative to positive. Here you can see East Bay Mud's overall rating is favorable, and most rate the district's job performance positively. That said, recent awareness is relatively low, with only about 1 in 5 hearing or seeing anything about the district lately.
Is that what negative means in this case? It's not actually negative, it's just unaware.
Right, unaware. When compared with other organizations, East Bay Mud's brand ranks high above local city governments, customers, internet providers, and PG&E.
Where's
the box cable. Room.
Nobody likes cable.
Nobody has cable anymore.
They must not have my cell phone service provider, is all I'm saying.
and I'm surprised. That's surprising to me that cell phone service now.
And I apologize. Some of these.
Their unfavorables are higher than ours, even though their favorables are higher than ours.
That's true. I apologize. Some of these slides are a little bit dense, but I wanted you to see the underlying data here. In the next slide, you can see East Bay Mud has strong ratings on core job responsibilities, including ensuring high-quality drinking water, making sure customers have the water supplies they need, and encouraging water conservation. Ratings on the quality of tap water have been improving steadily over time, with 80% rating the quality as excellent or good. While most drink water from the tap or filtered tap water, some still use bottled water, which is indicated here by the red line near the bottom. This slide shows customers share East Bay Mud's priorities, including reducing pollution in waterways, preparing for droughts and earthquakes, upgrading infrastructure, and reducing leaks and breaks. East Bay Mud's overall job rating has been consistently positive. However, you can see a recent decline. It's worth noting here that half of this year's results for the first time were gathered from email to web surveys in which customers received an email with a link to an online survey. Overall online results tend to be less positive than person-to-person interviews. And in this slide, you can see there was an accompanying uptick in don't know responses. The folks at EMC and I have discussed this, and it turns out that the anonymity of the online survey allows people a little bit more room to say they don't know. They feel a little freer to say they don't know, and the results are sometimes less positive. Impressions about water rates have also changed, with an increase in opinions that rates are too high. At this time, a plurality of respondents, 44%, think rates are too high. In terms of recent awareness, about 1 in 5 customers have heard about East Bay.
Oh, just a sure. Second. So, yeah. About right, and so too low is the top line. I'm having trouble distinguishing the colors.
Oh, the dark, yeah, right, the gray. Let's see, the 2%. I think the too low is the 2% at the bottom.
About right is 14%.
Right.
Too high is red, and don't know is 40.
It's 41. I believe that's right.
No.
Is that right?
About right is 41.
Oh.
Too high is 44.
Yeah, these colors, it's very hard to just,
yeah.
I'm having
the
a
gray
very hard
and the
time
blue.
Distinguish these colors.
But they're not in sequence, according to that, right?
So the top line is about right. Is that correct?
The top line that's 40, well, it's not top, actually, at the end of the day. The 41% is about right. 44% is too high. don't know is 14% and too low is 2%. Okay.
Any other questions on that?
Okay.
One?
So it's really 60. Okay.
So I would just comment here. That's a pretty significant takeaway.
It is.
That's a very significant change.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on that one?
I guess I do. It sounds like going back a couple other slides. Don't do that. That's okay. They don't know enough about us out there.
Right.
And that's what's generating these numbers.
And I'll get to that a little bit further on, but there is, I think, a lack of information that people have. And then once they get information, their opinions change dramatically. It's true.
It sounds like we need to get out there and do some marketing.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah, I think the low appreciation for upgrading infrastructure, reducing leaks and main breaks on the prior slide, I think indicates that too.
Yeah. Okay. And this gets to some of what you're talking about. This is about recent awareness. You can see about 1 in 5 customers have heard about East Bay Mud recently. That's fairly low. You can see a good portion of those who had positive feelings had recent experiences related to construction or fixing water lines. And here's the answer to the additional information question. So when people received more information about the district, their positive opinions of the district improved. Messages about East Bay Mud's proactive efforts to provide clean, safe water resonate widely with customers. So did messages about replacing pipes and the district's efforts to use new innovative technologies. Although slightly less compelling than other messages, explaining East Bay Mud's commitment to keeping water affordable is perceived as a significant positive. And then this slide shows that when people had more information about the district, ratings improved significantly. So you can see the initial rating on the left and then the rating after the messages.
What was the message that was delivered to make them move 27 points?
Right. So it was some of the messages that were on the previous slides.
Did you do A, B? I mean, you mixed them up. Not all questions for all.
They were all options.
Can't hear you.
They were randomized, however. So they were randomized.
Similarly, ratings of East Bay Mud's rate setting shift significantly after customers receive more information about the district.
And was this, did this play across the web as well as the phone interviews?
Okay.
Yes. About the same or?
Yeah, one of the things.
Could you come up to the mic, please?
Just to answer that question really quickly, one of the key things that we like to keep in mind with this methodology where we're doing roughly half of interviews over the phone and then half in response to email invitations online is that the two samples together, the two modes, are complementary so that we have a demographically representative sample overall. So the goal, of course, is not to look at the responses by each mode independently because they really don't match when it comes to the demographics. So we're a little hesitant to separate the responses by web versus phone. We've done that in a couple instances in our analysis just to compare the overall trends. And the overall trend is the same from the email responses compared to the phone, where we see an increase in favorability and an increase in rating of the rate setting after messages are presented.
Yeah, I was just curious because you brought up this big jump in people willing to say they don't know. So, to me, it sort of follows that you know, seeing if arguments in that are verbally delivered are more persuasive than arguments that are visually delivered you know, that seems to be, I'm curious.
Increase is bigger on the web with the web. Oh,
or whichever way. I mean, I would actually tend to think that verbal arguments are more compelling than visual ones, but I don't know. That's my guess. I'm guessing that. You can tell me if I'm wrong or right.
Okay. And then movers, or those who flipped from negative to positive on rates, are especially compelled by messages about proactive updates to the water system, the district's efforts to use innovative technologies, and the district's preparations for earthquakes. So you can see some themes there. In conclusion, the district's brand remains healthy and customers value the clean, safe water the district provides. There is an opportunity, however, to improve the district's ratings by explaining our efforts to upgrade the water system for future generations. Information about these efforts help customers see how their rate dollars are put to good use and flip many opinions from negative to positive.
Can you go back to the last slide and spend a little more time on that
one?
The top messages,
yep.
among movers. And so the first bar, overall, second bar, just explain kind of what those mean. And which was the strongest message?
That's going to come up. Sure. We looked at a segmentation of all respondents. So you can see the overall numbers in terms of responses to these individual messages are on the top for each message. And that's the overall. The initial positive are the people who were initially positive in their rating of the job that East Bay Mud is doing in setting water rates. The movers are the people who were positive after they were provided more information in terms of the job rating for East Bay Mud in setting water rates. So you can see 34% were initially positive, 30% were positive not initially, but only after more information was provided. So when you see that move to positive group, you can see that several of these messages caused a significant increase in favorability among that group. So it's roughly a third that became more positive after they heard all of the information. And then these are looking at the independent messages and how much each one caused them to move to more favorable.
So they were negative to begin? I'm just not clear what the group is that we're measuring.
Sure. The move to positive group was either negative or don't know initially when it comes to setting water rates. They were positive after all of this information was provided.
Okay.
So which was the strongest message? I'm getting what you're saying, but it's still not. I'm trying to interpret these charts. Or maybe they're kind of all more or less in the same. But
right. I think the overall takeaway from this slide is that among those who moved to more positive, they find these pieces of information particularly compelling.
All of these. Because were there others that were
Yeah, these are the four
here?
Out of the
These are just the top
12 or something that we had.
Yeah. So given that the survey helps inform our outreach, I wanted to highlight a few of our efforts in fiscal 19, as well as preview a few outreach efforts that we're looking at in fiscal 20. In an effort to connect with more of our communities, staff coordinated 17 events for the Water on Wheels trailer in FY19. In total, those events drew 150,000 people. And we're continuing the Water on Wheels work in FY20. The district also provided sponsorships to over 250 events and organizations this fiscal year. Staff partnered with California Department of Fish and Wildlife on a successful media tour of the fish hatchery in November 2018. The event garnered positive news stories in the San Francisco Chronicle, NBC Bay Area, KPIX, and others. In 2018, staff also completed a Watershed to Bay campaign, including a 12-page educational insert for a September edition of the East Bay Express. It had a press run of about 40,000 and was distributed throughout Alameda and Contra Costa counties. To enhance public outreach in emergencies, staff completed development of a map to convey information about water quality in the event of an incident.
A similar map about unplanned outages was expanded in June 2019, just last month. On the budget and rates front, staff created a four-page fact sheet for distribution in print and online. We also coordinated several award events, posted social media content, and developed internal communications on budget and rates as well. As you know, also, we had the June 4th public meeting to provide information and answer questions on the proposed FY 20 and 21 budgets. And then on the 11th, we had a press briefing on the proposed budget. As we look ahead to fiscal year 20, we're focused on building on those outreach efforts and improving how we tell the district story, particularly in the context of environmental protection, infrastructure renewal, and the costs of operating our system. We're also exploring new ways to educate people about the nuts and bolts of our system and address misconceptions that people might have. For instance, we're continuing to talk about how the district's budget and ratepayer dollars support critical infrastructure. For the first time this year, Finance and Public Affairs created a budget in brief pamphlet that can be handed out by field crews at public meetings and other events. We're also continuing to highlight investments in our system on social media and to media outlets. On emergency response, we're trying to ensure that our outreach continues to focus on critical information that our customers need. For instance, the July-August customer pipeline, which you all should have today, aims at helping customers understand how we're preparing for public safety power shutoffs. We've also developed an accompanying fact sheet, flyers, social media content, and a new PSPS webpage. Public Affairs is also working to identify new venues and tools for telling our story and educating the public. These are some pictures from a Nerd Night event, which is a popular monthly lecture series in the East Bay. At this event in Oakland, 160 attendees heard about how we're using innovative new practices and technologies in the pipeline rebuild program. Public Affairs is also hoping to utilize more video production. We have so many compelling visuals from our watersheds and treatment plants and aqueducts to our construction work and our rangers. We think this could be a really powerful tool moving forward, and we hope to leverage that next year and beyond, this year and beyond. Finally, this year and next, we're continuing to evaluate options for revamping our K-12 education program. We administered a pilot effort in several schools in May and June of this year. All told, we reached 175 students throughout the service area. Through the course of this year and next year, we hope to further develop a path for a new K-12 education program. The goal, again, is to inform and educate people, not just ratepayers and stakeholders, who are current ratepayers and stakeholders, but also the East Bay MUD customers, staff, and leaders of the future. Thanks. That's all I have, unless you have questions.
John?
Would we be able to get an electronic version of the report that has the tabs?
The survey?
The full report with cross tabs.
Survey?
I think we can provide that, sure.
Great. Thank you. That'd be awesome.
Judd?
I'm not sure I need the cross tabs, but I would like to have the survey at least in color, because these are really hard to look at black and white. The pipeline is does that go out to everybody when they do it electronically?
The customer pipeline?
Yeah.
That does go out to everyone, yes.
Even when they pay online?
You have to click through to get to it online. It is mailed physically to all those who receive physical bills, right?
So it's on the website.
So you have to look at your bill in order to get to the pipe.
If you go to that page, you can click on Pay Your Bill, and then right there to the top right is a thumbnail of customer pipeline.
All right. Andrew. Go ahead.
Yeah, so my comment would just be, I think we should, as we're evaluating what tools work and which ones don't, I'm guessing fewer people see that than used to.
Yeah.
And we should just factor that in.
Yeah, I mean, if we have 65% of our customers paying online, if any of them are like me, I look at my bill way more than I used to because I'm on the board now, but I have auto pay. I don't have to look at my bill. I don't have to mostly don't. So I think looking at how to push pipeline out to people that we have emails for separately from the bill. It doesn't cost anything more to do that. I don't know how dramatically many more people will look at it, but at least it'll be in their inbox, and they could if they wanted to, versus, you know, having to do a couple clicks.
That is something we've been discussing.
Is it posted on our Facebook page and Twitter also when it comes out?
And on Nextdoor.
And Nextdoor?
All 838 Nextdoor neighborhoods.
Okay.
You know, there's this thing we send out with people who sign up online about how much water they're using and the like, and they get a report. Water. It would seem to me that rather than having them click through to get over to the pipeline, that it is part of their report, and therefore it's just a flow all the way down.
You're talking about the WaterSmart.
People that are signed up for it.
Yeah, the WaterSmart. And there's a lot of people that sign up for it. It's astonishing. But I'm willing to bet they don't see that pipeline report.
Yeah.
I'm particularly interested in, we have a lot of great, none of the messages that you put out here are new. You know, these are the things that we've been saying, you know, certainly since I got on the board and probably long before that. It is good to see. I know now we're on Facebook, finally. Just how well we're doing at really managing our, sort of social media presence in terms of not just a static presence, but an interactive presence, and I don't know that we're doing that so well. We say, because we know, that's a lot of work. Well, yes, it's a lot of work, but it's work that, I think we need to measure the payoff associated with that investment and try it more to have a more. And the other thing I think, and I'm really glad to see it, is our education pilot, and I think that is expansion of that and having that in, every curriculum and amping up our poop to power, field trips and the other things that we do to have people really, and, our ranger program and other things that really invest in, moving that message, out and looking at ways that our curriculum, especially our grade school curriculum, involves not just the students, but their families. In some way, I think, is also the way that, we can grow
our audience.
But it has to be, we can't just say, oh, well, we have a website and it's great and expect that to change anything in terms of public perception or attitudes. We have to actively engage. And we can see that in the, when people interact with our field crews, they have a positive impression, and I think that budget and brief thing to give out is great, but we have to figure out more ways for the district to interact with our customers.
Absolutely.
And more water on wheels. I think it's an investment that pays off.
Two other suggestions. You're doing this educational program, and maybe we can get a twofer out of that where it becomes likewise a traveling road show type of video we can use. Mm-hmm. And then, Eric, don't get upset by what I'm going to say, but let's give some handouts that our crews can have in their trucks so that when somebody, interacts with them, here, let me give you this about us, because I'm sorry to admit it, people just don't even read their bills when it gets mailed to them. So, Eric, I don't know if this will generate a meet and confer. I hope not. But it seems to me if we give our folks who are out in the field who are getting that face-to-face contact a tool or two, they're our best representatives because they do such good work. See, I made myself good.
I think the budget and brief is a step toward that, but I think, there's room to grow. There's more opportunity there.
Andy?
I agree with what's been said so far and would add that I think we were able to test effectively that there's a gap in customer awareness about some of our key messages. I think we've done better in the past when we were actively discussing these issues during a drought setting, and we're out of a drought setting. We're less on customers' minds, but customers are still thinking about us when they pay their bill, and they're about to see a rate increase coming soon. So I think now is a very important time to be talking about the same things we've been talking about, but particularly in the coming building cycles, the pipeline infrastructure rebuild. Mm-hmm. Those we have a lot of content that's great, and I think got good responses and is effective in educating customers about these messages. And I would encourage just doing pushing the same content and the same types of messages. Innovating where it makes sense. Perhaps we do more actively on social media or on other web presence opportunities if we think that the eyes are more on online viewing for news sites. Maybe we should be exploring advertising in those media. I don't want to substitute my recommendation for the industry knowledge. So, you know, I think I would trust the staff to research where's the most effective to put our outreach and education dollars. But perhaps we should try more than just the only outdoor billboards and look at other places where people will see the message. I think that the K through 12 education outreach is not the same goal as this. I think it reaches a longer term audience and could inspire our workforce. I think creates a longer term and longer range cultural change. And I'd like to see a pilot eventually become a model for what other K through 12 educators throughout all of our communities are adopting. So if we're learning good tools, I think that the fifth grade lesson pilot is a great place to focus, because that's where the education guidelines ask that the water cycle be taught. Mm-hmm. So it's a good alignment. I don't know what we do about high school and other grade levels, but I think that for the water cycle and the fifth grade alignment, that's a very smart place to be focusing on. And I'd like to see greater utilization of our Rangers and outdoor ed programs, especially now that OUSD has received a major grant for outdoor education. It might be a good time to make sure that faculty at all of our schools really know the possibilities and the benefits of utilizing that. If I have other thoughts, I will share them offline. I think it would be great for the to better understand the difference in audience, because I think the results are very interesting as we shift to the different collection method. It's hard. I don't think the customers changed quite as much as the different outreach method. But it leaves a lot of questions. So if we learn more about that, I'd like to get any follow up information if we can study that closer, and sure. The board can hear about it more by memo. Thanks.
Okay.
I want to make one other comment as I've had a chance to look at this a little bit more. I know we're kind of upbeat in this. We still have a positive perception and stuff like that. But I find some of these results alarming. I don't know if you have a different conclusion, but in the past 10 years, our overall job rating has dropped 11%, and the rate perceptions have dropped 17%, and are now net negative. Both of those are fairly alarming, and I appreciate the programs and the information. Clearly, people understand it. And, I know this on my own personal basis. I've gotten more flack on rates than I had previously. When I talk about our pipe replacement, people are usually kind of get to understand and are supportive that way. But it is, I don't think there's just a smiley face on this overall thing by any means. I think there's issues here that we need to make sure that we're watching here, because if we don't have public support for our rate increases to do this work, We don't have public support for things we do. It causes all kinds of other problems. And so I'm glad we took this poll. I think it's very important information. We need to take it seriously and not say, oh, well, we're still better than the cable company in terms of our...
We're not better than the cell phone company. That's alarming.
Right. I mean, these are fairly low bars here. Everybody hates their potholes. Everybody hates their cable company, and their cell phone service is never good enough. I don't really like being grouped with those folks as the high point of where we are. Anyway.
All right.
Thank you for that input, and we will. You dropped your card right there. And so we'll provide an electronic version, including a color version of the slides, a little info on the ratings as was requested by phone versus by internet, if we have some understanding, and then all the other suggestions we'll work to incorporate into our fiscal year 20 approach. Also,
we'll
under.
We'll be able to get the report, right?
Yes, with tabs. We'll send it to all board members. Okay. Also in the general manager's report materials, we have a six-month forecast of upcoming committee meetings and agenda topics. We also have an info memo here as it relates to the appointment of an ad hoc committee to negotiate amendments to employment agreements with general manager and general counsel, which if the board is interested, an action would be taken at this time.
We did... past practice, I think, has been to have the president and vice president of the board, along with the immediate past president, participate in that committee. And since Director McIntosh had to be medically excused from today's meeting, our intention is to ask her to serve in that capacity, but we have not been able to. So I don't know if we can.
I think you could appoint three with one alternative.
Okay. So it would move that we appoint an ad hoc committee composed of myself, Director Linney, and Director McIntosh with an alternate of Bill, you were the vice president. Director Patterson as the alternate. That's acceptable?
Yes.
Do we need to vote on that, Greg?
Yes, please.
Then I would move the ad hoc committee as designated by the board president to be accepted.
I'll second it since I'm not on it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. And then we'll follow up with Director McIntosh and then set meetings with.
Right. So at the next closed session on the 23rd, the board then can discuss the evaluations and give direction to the ad hoc committee.
Ah, okay. Can remember exactly the protocol on that. Okay.
Right, and then also in the materials, we have the updated Speakers Bureau with quite a bit of activity this summer.
Okay. Then we have reports and director comments, including reports to receive from planning, which I guess in the absence of...
No, I'm the chair.
Oh, you're the chair now. That's right. Sorry. Director Linney.
The planning committee met this morning to receive information on three items: the Arinda Water Treatment Plant Disinfection Improvements Project update, number two, the Wastewater Outfall Bridge Overcrossing, and three, the Public Safety Power Shutoff update. These were all informational items. We didn't have any votes on these, but appreciated the staff reports.
Okay, and from the Legislative and Human Resources Committee.
Thank you. We had a 10-minute presentation by Justin Young with the first VP of 2019 on some electrical engineer issues that have been raised. He's also, Alex, General Manager Cote, is committed to working with them. They've had discussions, and they're working through some of the issues that were raised. And Justin gave a very good presentation today. We dealt with the legislative items already here before the board, and then we had a quarterly update on our diversity and inclusion action-oriented programs and outreach. A really good report was put together, and we will be getting that quarterly, and it's now part of an interdisciplinary?
The board will receive an annual report at the end of the year along with all of the other interdepartmental committee reports.
But it's a standing committee now.
Right, standing committee, right. And as such, the board receives a report at the end of the year.
Okay. Other reports are in your packets from the Finance Administration Committee minutes. I don't recall that any items for future consideration came up. I do actually want to, and I'm not sure how this gets reflected, but we had lately some communication about board member travel in response to emergency meetings or other special meetings that might need to be calendared, requesting notification to the board secretary and I think the board president would be appropriate of absences of more than, we said in that memo, more than a week, but I actually raised that I think actually that if you are out of the district for more than going to be out of the district for more than 24 hours, that you need to communicate that to the board secretary and the board president as you become aware of that. And I recognize that for some of us, that's a lot. I travel once a week, pretty much most of the time. But, I mean, I think because of the noticing requirements and the quorum requirements, that's something that we need to start doing so that we are sure that we can rally the an adequate number of board members to participate in emergency or special meetings that may arise.
This last earthquake was probably a good wake-up call on that.
Yeah. Well, and I think we just had a meeting where we had two members out of the country. And one of them we didn't know about until, like, kind of last minute. So had one more person fallen off the map, we wouldn't have been able to, or would have been able to still have a quorum, but it would have been just barely so. So I just think, you know, we can't invoke the surrogate board members unless the governor declares a state of emergency. So, okay.
Clarify. You're saying.
So if you go out of the district.
Out of the district boundaries.
Yes.
Why don't we also say and are unable to be in district boundaries for within that emergency 24-hour period?
I just think if you're,
Well, I agree with Marguerite on this, and I actually add in addition to Risha, it should be Alex and the board president who should know that.
This is beginning to sound like...
So I think we're now in the discussion. So we put together an item for consideration around this notification issue?
So, Risha, do you want to...
We
did
about
provide
it
an information memo in an effort to provide some clarity. Risha, would you like to share what...
Well, is it something that requires board action, or can the board president just direct something to be so...
That sounds like an executive order the president would do.
Well, I don't know. I'm just I'm asking whether it, I mean, if it rises to the level of board action being necessary or,
We prepared the memo and we asked for locations as a courtesy for people to just, most people
right.
are pretty good about letting us know if they're not in the service area, but taking into consideration if you travel once a week and the MUDAC says you're out of the service area, and we have two people out of the country, somebody just out of the service
of
area not to get back.
Yeah. Fourth of July weekend. How many of you were somewhere else? How many?
Saturday.
Okay, point taken. How many of you told anybody that you were somewhere, told anybody
told
here?
My wife.
No, I mean, I said I'm not going to be reachable. I let Doug know, I let Risha know, I let Alex know.
I let Risha know that I was going to be out of the area, but that I'd be reachable.
So let's have a discussion about it. Yeah, let's calendar it.
Would you like to have
it.
Further discussion or just let Risha?
No, let's calendar it for discussion and figure out what the, you know, write an information memo about options and then, we can have a conversation about it, make a decision.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Director comments? Nobody. Okay. Turn in your calendar to the secretary. And with that, we are adjourned until our next regular meeting on Tuesday, July 23rd.
Yep.
Thank you.